2 months and 6 days later, the German passenger liner SS Admiral steamed into Kilindini Lagoon, the deep water harbour that served as a port for the coastal town of Mombasa. The ship's rigging was blazing with coloured bunting. At her mainmast, she flew Old Glory, and at her foremast, the black eagles of the Kaiser's Germany. On the foredeck, the band blared out the Star-Spangled Banner and God Save the King. The beach was crowded with spectators and government dignitaries, headed by the governor of the territory and the commander of His Britannic Majesty's forces in British East Africa, all in full-dress uniform, complete with feathers in their cocked hats and swords on their hips. Lying out in the deep water, a flotilla of barges and surf boats waited to ferry the passengers to the beach. Former President Colonel Teddy Roosevelt and his son were first to climb down into one of the waiting boats. As the distinguished visitors took their seats on the thwarts and the oarsmen pulled in towards the beach, the dark rain clouds lowering over the lagoon opened their bellies, and with a barrage of thunder and fork lightning loosed a torrential downpour on the scene. Roosevelt arrived on the beach, having been carried through the shallows on the back of a muscular, half-naked porter. His bush jacket was soaked, and he was roaring with laughter. It was just the type of adventure he relished. The governor hurried forward to meet him, clutching with one hand the plume of white ostrich feathers on his cocked hat, and with the other trying to disentangle his sword from between his legs. He had placed his private train at the disposal of the president and his entourage. As soon as they were all safely aboard, the clouds rolled aside and brilliant sunshine sparkled on the choppy waters of the lagoon. The large crowd burst into a chorus of "For he's a jolly good fellow." Teddy Roosevelt stood plump and beaming on the balcony of the leading carriage and acknowledged the cheers as the driver blew his whistle and the train pulled away at the start of the journey up country to Nairobi. 100 miles inland, the train halted at Voi Siding, the southernmost extent of the vast plains that lay between the Tsavo and Ati rivers. A wooden bench had been built as a viewing platform over the cowcatcher at the front of the locomotive. The president and Frederick Selous climbed up and settled themselves on the bench. Selous was the most revered of all the African hunters, the author of many books on travel and adventure, and a naturalist who had devoted his life to studying and cherishing the animals of the great continent. Renowned for his strength and determination, it was said of him that when all the others fall by the wayside, Selous keeps on to the end of the road. His physique was robust, his beard steely grey, his eyes were steady and far-seeing, and his expression was mild and saintly. Selous and Roosevelt, although so different in appearance, were kindred spirits of the wild open spaces. While the train puffed across the plains of Tsavo, teeming to the horizon with herds of antelope, the two great men huddled together in conversation, discussing the wonders that lay all around them. As darkness fell, they retired to the comfort of the governor's carriage. When the train pulled into Nairobi station early the following morning, the entire population was on the platform to catch a glimpse of the former president. Over the following days, a program of receptions, balls, and sporting events, including polo and horse racing, had been arranged for his entertainment. It was a week before Roosevelt had performed his social obligations, and the safari was ready to depart. Again they travelled by train as far as the remote bush siding of Kapiti Plains. When they arrived, the safari was drawn up like a small army to meet them. The next morning, when the march began, the president, with Selous and his son on either hand, rode at the head of the column. Behind them, carried by a uniformed askari, Old Glory spread in the breeze. Next came the KAR marching band, giving an approximate rendition of Dixie. The rest of the thousand-strong group straggled back 2 miles over the veld. Leon Courtney was not one of this multitude. For the last 6 weeks, he had been setting up supply dumps at waterholes along the safari's intended route.